Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My name is Jenna Russell, and you're listening to 11, the official theatre podcast.
Hello and welcome to 11, the official theatre podcast that brings the biggest stars and creatives together in one place to discuss life in the arts. Now, she's an icon of the stage, has got a Tony nomination and an Olivier Award to her name. We've seen her live here in the UK and also on Broadway in the likes of shows including Piaf, Celebrating Sondheim, Guys and Dolls, Sunday in the Park with George, Fun Home, Merrily We Roll Along, You're in Town, Into the Woods, Les Miserables, High Society, Follies, Martin Guerre, Soho Cinders, and Grey Gardens, to name but a few. She is, by all means, a living legend and one of my all-time favourite performers who is, after such a long time, returning to the stage for an exclusive solo concert. So here now, in an exclusive conversation, we discuss why she is terrified of concerts, so has pushed away from them in the past, but is now tackling this fear head-on as she returns officially to the stage this November. Why she prefers to challenge herself creatively and move to varying different jobs, avoiding greater lengths in long-running shows. The story of how she became an understudy way back during the early days of Les Mis, and the life lessons it taught her, including why she would describe the experience as terrifying, but why it made her want to return to lead the company in the early 90s. Plus, why we also need to all admit that most successful understudies steal like mad all the good bits from their leading actors. Why starring in Fun Home lent into the pocket of musical theatre that she adores, and how the show pushed away the often negative attitudes of a musical always having to be positive and not show darker stories and those that are more serious. Her love for the detail and explosion of heartache seen in musical Hamilton, and why she'd shied away from listening to the album before seeing it live. Working with legends including Ewan McGregor and Sarah Lancashire in a certain signature production of Guys and Dolls, and why Ewan warned her about not going back to see that production once she left. Why she's keeping everything crossed for Hello Dolly's return to the London stage soon, and how she dealt with the news it was being postponed due to the pandemic. And why, if it does happen, she'll tick off a personal bucket list dream of working with a certain British icon. Why Sunday in the Park with George is one of her favourite shows ever, and how her dreams all came true getting to take it to Broadway, including losing her Tony Award to Patti LuPone. But why that's sort of okay, because, well, it's Patti LuPone. Why Jamie Lloyd's You're in Town was totally weird and crazy, but exactly why she adored it. Why she believes there is a future life in the Grey Gardens musical, and the real struggle of working with a history of such unattractive leading men. It's actual living legend and stage icon Jenna Russell, here now on this, the next episode of 11, the official theatre podcast. To ensure the safety of all involved in this episode of 11, Jenna and I connected for this conversation digitally, so please forgive any brief moments while we wait for the internet to catch up. Enjoy. Please help me welcome to this, the next episode of 11. She's the Tony nominee and Olivier winner. That's an actual living legend. I'm so excited. Hi, Jenna Russell.
Hello, William.
So nice to see you, just to see your face on my screen and to actually know that theatre and live performances and everything is coming back. I mean, I think just seeing your face today has made me smile. So I feel like a bit of a Cheshire cat just staring at you.
Bless you. I know. I feel like I've had all my limbs cut off not being away from our beloved theatre for so long. But yes, fingers crossed, we're getting back on track.
It's exciting that things are starting to reopen. And one of the big major moments in the calendar coming up is you. And this is very exciting because you are doing, don't make that face, I promise it's exciting. I feel like, because this is a podcast, you can't see what Jenna just did, but she looked really nervous, like, oh gosh. But it is exciting because you're doing a solo show at a very famous venue called Cadogan Hall. And basically, it's just going to be like two and a half hours of us just being obsessed with you, which is basically my life anyway. So before we talk about specifics, just, are you excited?
I am excited. I mean, it's a weird one, isn't it? I've avoided these things for so long. Darren Bell asked me to do a concert last year, which we managed to sneak in just before the second lockdown happened. And I was dreading that. But actually, I really enjoyed it. And I was surprised at how much I did enjoy it. And I had such a good time doing it. And he said, let's do another one, but let's do it bigger. And came up with this idea. And I thought, do you know what? You've got to frighten yourself sometimes, haven't you? And I seem to be in the business of putting myself in scary positions in the last few years. As I'm getting older, I'm thinking I might not have this opportunity again. So grab it, do it, and I'm sure it will be fine. So I'm actually really excited, but also terrified, of course.
Are you terrified because there isn't a character there perhaps that you can put at the front and therefore you know it's not Jenna as the individual? Or are you just terrified because you've not done it perhaps for a year and a half? What bit of it scares you?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. I've done the odd concert, you know, singing with lovely people. And I always find concerts terrifying because it's about perfection, and you don't have a character to hide behind. And, you know, if you know me and know kind of what I do, I'm not about the voice beautiful. I can sing a song, you know, it's not like I can't sing, but I'm not a vocal technician, but I can put across the emotion in a song and I can deliver comedy within a show. So I've always resisted concerts because exactly, you kind of walk on cold in a dress, sing a number and walk off. But I think what I found interesting about doing the show at the Hippodrome was it's a kind of marriage of both. You get to talk about the show a bit before you sing the song. So you kind of work your way into the character that way, and you can bring the audience in that way. And it just becomes more about storytelling, which is kind of what I like doing. That's kind of the thing that interests me, I guess.
I can sing a song as literally the understatement of the century, but bless you for being modest.
You know what I mean? You know, there are some people, I've got friends who are extraordinary singers. Like, I don't know whether you know Ali Jaya, but, you know, yeah. Ali, Hannah Waddingham, these people have voices. Damien Humbley, I've sung in concert with Damien where I go, oh, shut up. You're just too good. Doff my cap to them all because they're brilliant, and they can do the other bit as well. But I'm good at the other bit, not so much the bit that they're good at.
When you talk about the stories and explaining perhaps some songs that have become synonymous with you, roles that people have loved that you've perhaps been celebrated for, I guess sort of the bits in between the singing where the audience gets to feel like they know you a little bit more and you get to know the audience as well. Do you like those moments? Do you sort of like going down memory lane? Because I know some people like it in the moment, but perhaps they like to move on and not be known for specific things or even just one thing. Or are you sort of like, actually, I like talking about my career because they're milestones for me as an individual? How do you see it?
Well, I guess I do like talking about it because I talk to students about this a lot. You know, careers take weird paths and you can't ever think, oh, I've reached this part, I've done this bit, therefore the ladder goes this way. It always goes in different directions. And often, you know, you lose out on jobs, or a job is a disaster that you think was going to be wonderful, but that opens a door into something else. Or you're playing the lead one day, then you don't work for a bit and you get offered a job, but it's a much smaller part. But you do that and that moves you into another direction. Sometimes you have to take a few steps back in order to move forward again, or sideways, you know. And I guess I've always loved that in my career. People go, oh goodness, how come you can do telly and how come you can do, and it's more often to do with the fact that I've never really been a big fan for myself of doing a long contract in anything. So, you know, I like to jump into a project, stay there for a few months, and then move on to another one. And that often takes you, branches you out in different directions. And you learn stuff from that. So I'm constantly learning. And, you know, funny, me and my other half have been making an office out of our spare bedroom. And we thought, you know what, let's go up into the loft and get all our little bits and bobs that you know, you keep from shows, or posters or pictures of you with friends from shows, and put them up, because we've got nowhere that we've ever done that, you know, and I'm quite old now. I've never put these things up. And so getting them all out, I was like, oh my word, I forgot about that. And oh, that's the first time I met that person. And then there I was 15 years later doing that with them, that wouldn't have happened unless I'd done that. I do like taking a trip down memory lane, because I just think it does inform who we are ultimately at the end of the day. You know, we're our history, good and bad.
I think it's really interesting what you said there about not wanting to stay in things for too long. But I think sometimes obviously people see that as a safety blanket where they stay in something, obviously because it's work, and I completely get that. But do you think, because you've perhaps done the opposite of that in some instances where you've wanted to move around and perhaps challenge yourself as an individual, you've been able to learn almost from yourself because you've actually applied yourself to different things and got more in the skill set, and therefore been able to say, well, I know I'm going to do this for 6 months there, but I'll learn a completely new show again for something else. Do you think it sort of kept it fresh?
Yeah, I mean, and also I think it's taste, isn't it? I've always thought acting is such an odd job to do, and it's so fragile, and you never kind of know what's coming up next. So I've always been of the mind, grab an opportunity when you get it, but make sure it's something you love. I think that's probably why I've shied away from long contracts, because I want to still love it. And, you know, I've been doing it since I was 14. And the good news is I do still love it. And I do think that's because, for me personally, being in one show for a year, I think it would become like a normal job. And you might have a crap year and do nothing, but you might do something extraordinary. You know, years ago, I remember an agent saying to me, you know, you can only really attract work when you're out of work. If you're in a long contract for something, people forget about you and don't ask, because they go, oh no, she's in blah blah, forget about that. But if you're constantly available, and then not available, but it gives you more opportunities. And also I like to work with new directors. I like to work in smaller spaces, so doing those shorter, sharper jobs has always worked out well for me.
I may be completely wrong on this, and I hope my memory serves me right, so please do correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the first major professional roles that you did was understudying in Les Mis. And yeah. I just wondered, because you understudied Eponine and Fontaine, right? Did you do
No, I understudied Eponine, because I remember when they asked me to do it, it was because Francis Raffel, who played Eponine originally, was going to Broadway. So the show hadn't long come out of the Barbican into the Palace. And when Frances went to New York, the girl, I think this is right, the girl who understudied her was moved up to play the part, and they had a spot open for an understudy. But in those days you could, and I did, I was like, yeah, I'll do it. But I had another show, kind of my first big show coming into town, which was a Howard Goodall show called Girlfriends. So I said, but I can only do it for 3 months. So they said, yeah, that's fine. So I only did it for 3 months then. And then I did go back in 1990, and I played Fontaine.
So I wondered how much that time being an understudy and a cover, and then obviously going to play the role full time later on, how much did that teach you as an individual, as a young performer, you know, the sort of the craft, I guess, if that's the right phrase. And I guess, do you still pay reference to that? Do you still think, oh, that's a skill, or that's something that I know that is because of that experience in Les Mis? Because I can imagine it's stuff like that when you're not doing it full time, where you sort of are pretty much just a sponge. You just take it all in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, being an understudy is a great job. It's kind of terrifying. You know, you get to save the day. It's a nice feeling when you do get on. I never actually got on as Eponine, but I did, you know, obviously we'd have a rehearsal once every 2 weeks, and it was great singing the part and doing the part. But all the best understudies I've ever seen are brilliant at, because of course with a big show, and actually any old show, you can't suddenly walk off stage right and do your own. You have to stay in the relatively same position because you're lit, you know, otherwise if you wander off to the left or right, you're not lit. So you've got an opportunity to make it your own. But I think what the best understudies do, and actually best performers do, is steal like mad all the good bits and try and chuck in a few little extras when they've got them. You know, and I still do that. I still watch shows or film or certain things, and if something happens or a choice is made that I go, oh, that's good, I literally steal it. My other half talks about actors being magpies, and we are. There's no shame in stealing wonderful moments. That's the joy of being an actor, to be observing people. You know, somebody with a particular walk, I'll just bank it. I'll put it somewhere. And one day that comes up. I've got about three things that I still haven't had an opportunity to use that blew my mind at the time. But I go, one day there'll be a show and I can use that moment. I'll steal that moment. So no shame in that. And that's a great thing about being an understudy. It's one thing to think, oh yeah, I'm going to do my own thing. But really good understudies steal all the best bits of the performer they're understudying and just whack in a few extras.
Does it ever work the other way? Do you ever have an understudy and you hear things that they do, you know, if you're in the theatre at the same time, they perhaps are rehearsing or performing and think, excuse me, you're not supposed to be better than me.
Do you know what? I've never seen an understudy do a show. I guess it's because the sad thing is you're ill. Usually when you're off, you're ill or you've hurt something or you've sprained something, so you can't, which is a shame. That's why it's a real gift when you're an understudy, because you get to watch the show. I remember the one time I did get a really good opportunity was when I did Martin Guerre. Once I'd been cast, because the show was already running, Cameron said, come and watch the show. I said, was that a good idea? He said, no, come and watch it. So I sat and I watched it, and that was really informative because I got to see what the show was and where moments I thought, oh, that's not working, or that's, I know what that needs. It needs more of this or less of that. But that's only because I had the, you know, the great good fortune to be able to see it. Most of the time, usually in the jobs that I do, I don't get to see the show before because I'm in it.
Yeah.
So again, that's one of the things of being in a short run of something like Fun Home. I didn't see it in New York. I didn't get a chance to see our production because it was only, what was it, 12 weeks, something like that. I didn't get to watch any of the show apart from the little bits in tech.
Yeah.
Whereas if you were taking over in Les Mis, you could more than likely watch the show a few times, steal the good bits and polish up some other moments.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You did mention Fun Home there, and it's something that I just wanted to very briefly mention to you because I saw it and I thought it was extraordinary.
It's a brilliant show, isn't it?
And I feel like as an audience member, and I think this is very much a positive, and I love seeing pieces like this, I sort of was really clueless going in, especially with the title, with the actual subject matter in particular. And I personally like stuff like that. I think it makes it exciting as an audience member. I feel like if you know too much, you think, well, come on then, impress me. And whereas actually with this, it sort of broke my heart. And I wondered for you, the heart of it and at the center of it, did that happen every night?
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful show. For me, you know, all art is personal, isn't it? We all like different things. For me, that show is kind of right in the pocket of what touches me and moves me, and where I think personally musical theatre can be so brilliant, because, you know, you get a lot of people coming after the show to that say, wow, it's like a play, isn't it? It's like a play with songs. And I remember the writer, well, all the writers, because we chatted to them all about this, they used to, in New York, go, but it's a musical. Yeah, it's not a play. It's a musical. Because, of course, when people think of musicals, they think of jazz hands, possibly tap dancing, kind of over-sincere singing and lots of glitzy, schmitzy stuff. But there's another world of musicals, which is darker, more interesting for me, for my taste, has those moments like Fun Home has great, exuberant moments, funny moments, charming moments, but it has this dark story of, and actually a very small story about a family and secrets and how these things can fracture lives and memories, how we remember things. That's the bit that moves me the most, because I don't know about you, but I'm a bit like that. When I remember stuff about me as a kid, I don't know how much of it is made up and how much of it is folklore, you know, family folklore, or how much of it is real. We always have that kind of, did that really happen? Oh, yeah. I think it did. I've got a memory. And that's what the whole of Fun Home is about, with remembering your family's past, knowing there was something wrong, something that was unspoken, but does she remember it correctly, you know, with tragic results? Along the way in that show, you laugh lots, you have joy, you know, when young Alison, you know, discovers herself and her sexuality. It's a beautiful moment, and I defy anyone to not just be so lifted by that song, Changing My Major to Joan. It's kind of perfect and brilliantly directed. You know, this was a show that was, what, 5 years in the making. They did workshop after workshop in New York, and they had the right funding, and they could make this extraordinary piece of art that put lesbians, a story of a lesbian lead character front and center. It's never been done before, you know, all written by women. It was an amazing piece of work, and I'm so proud and lucky that I got to be in it, and we all felt that we were in something, you know, super special.
And I feel like it is, because I think you're completely right there, a part of this sort of, I don't want to say a new generation, because there will always be exceptions, but this sort of boldness of people to tell stories like this in the world of musical theatre. Plays are completely separate, but, and I just thinking out loud, but like Come From Away is probably a really good example, probably, you know, the worst terrorist attack on staging.
I've not seen it, you know, and I so need to see that show.
It's extraordinary. And you sit there and I remember going to see it thinking, this is not going to be good. You know, you sort of write it off before it started. And I even think about Once, it's the same sort of era of theatre where it's tackling difficult subjects or fun things or heartbreak or, you know, In Another Lifetime. And I like the fact that musical theatre is daring to, I don't want to say edge on the serious side, but it's daring to almost channel out a new direction where the acting is equally as important as the music, which sometimes isn't necessarily always the case. I think it's exciting. I can imagine for you, as someone that likes to sing but is character driven and actor driven, that's exciting for you.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best because, you know, you can move people. You know, I think, you know, that's the thing about theatre, isn't it? And that's what I've missed in this awful pandemic that we've been through. I've missed that connection. There's a thing that happens in the theatre, and I'm sure, I haven't seen Come From Away, but I'm sure that's one of the feelings of that show, is that you go, oh, what's this going to be? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like it's actually probably a very small story, and it's about people connecting and helping each other and holding each other up. And that's what theatre can do. You know, when we used to finish Fun Home, in the audience, in the curtain call, I could see the people who were reacting, and it was all different types of people, but you could see that it was having a really strong effect on people. And of course, there are going to be people that come walk away, I don't know what that's about, or yeah, it was all right, I didn't like that song. For me, it's the bigger picture, you know, and you know, who is the person that paved the way for all this? It's, you know, in my mind, Sondheim. Mm-hmm. You know, he gave us the opportunity. He opened the door of saying that musicals don't all have to be jolly hockey sticks. They can obviously have those moments, but they are character driven. Yep. Much more his shows, I think, and writers since Sondheim have picked up on that. Don't see, you know, people haven't seen Hamilton. I shied away from listening to the album and everything. I had no idea what it was about. I really kept away from it because I wanted to experience it. And when I went to see it, I mean, I just was looking around, just going, oh my goodness, what is going on here? There's a perfect example of how something can be commercial, hugely commercial, but it's intelligent, it's telling a story in a different way, yet there's extraordinary choreography, there's moments of exhilaration, there's comedy, there's this terrible, aching, dark story of loss. I mean, it's got everything, that show.
Now, I don't want to embarrass you too much, but I was looking through some of the people that you've worked with, and I sort of feel like you are showing off a little bit, because you've worked with literally some of the biggest names in some of your shows. And I don't know how much you remember, but I was like, let's just take Guys and Dolls, for example. So Ewan McGregor was in that production at one point. Nigel Harmer was in there. Sarah Lancashire, who of course is on the big screen now with Jamie. I mean, Jane Krakowski, she was in it as well. Nigel Lindsay. I mean, that's one production out of how many that you've done. I mean, and also, you're Jenna Russell, like you're an actual superstar. I mean, when you all meet, do you all sort of like, do you all like put your hands together and like something magical happens, or do you all sing in harmony? Like, what happens?
That's hilarious. Who knows? Do you know what? I think the best thing about theatre is you might put the best cast together. You might have the best director, the hottest director, the set designer of the century, and it might not work. It's just, you know, it's always like a mad chemistry lesson. Alchemy happens, and sometimes you throw stuff in the pot and something beautiful comes out. And oftentimes it's the shows that are the most difficult to give birth to that you kind of go, oh, this is never going to happen. This is a nightmare. And you're all crying and stressy McStress from Stressville, Idaho time. And then this beautiful thing pops out at the end of it. But, you know, Guys and Dolls, I mean, from what I can gather, I never went to see the show. Ewan McGregor did. I was in it with Ewan. And then I agreed to stay for an extra 3 months. And that's when Nigel came in, and Sarah Lancashire and Nigel Lindsay and Nigel Harmon, the first one. But Ewan came back to see it when I was doing it with Nigel Harmon. And he came into the dressing room and he said, never, ever see this show. I went, really? He went, honest to God, Jenna. He said, promise me, when you leave, do not go and see it. I went, why? He went, because it's so good. He said, I just wanted to run up on the stage and throw that actor who's playing my part off the stage, because I wanted to do it. He said, I wanted to be doing the scenes with you. And I think I know what he means. So I didn't actually go and see the show. But from what I gather, everyone who's ever done Guys and Dolls will kind of go, ah, yeah. I think it was Imelda Staunton that said when she did the show, because she did it a long time ago at the National Theatre, I think she understudied Adelaide. She understudied Julie McKenzie, but she met her husband on that show. She said it's one of those shows where everybody just falls in love with everybody, and not in a kind of let's ruin our marriage kind of way.
Yeah.
In a way that the show is so joyous, and it is. It's ridiculously joyous. And it's so well written. It's tight as a drum. There's nothing wrong with it at all. You just got to put it on and make sure you do it correctly. And the audience love it. That it's just so full of love. And I think you have to do a lot wrong to make a show like Guys and Dolls not work. I gather as well, the other one where this is true is Hello Dolly, which sadly I was meant to do, and we lost that job. Oh gosh, I hope it comes back. But Gavin Creel, who's a brilliant Broadway actor, he did it recently with Bette Midler. And when they asked me to do it, I rang him up. I said, oh, Gavin, be honest with me. Will I enjoy it? He went, Jenna, you have to do it. It fills you with joy. He said, you'll walk around with a massive smile on your face the whole time you're doing it. He said, because audiences love it. They lap it up. It's great fun to do. There's nothing wobbly or fatty in it. It's just brilliant. So hopefully we'll get to do that again. I hope so.
I'm keeping everything crossed.
Imelda will be amazing in that part. She'll be amazing. And also, I've always wanted to work with her. So
have you never worked with her? Never?
No.
Oh my gosh.
We did a concert together ages ago, just when I'd had my little girl. It was the first job I had back after having my daughter. And I hadn't been on the stage since Sunday in the Park with George in New York. It was a Friday night is music night, and we hadn't met, but we were doing Alan J. Lerner music, and I was singing Somebody Somewhere from Most Happy Fella, And I stood up. It was in the rehearsal and Imelda was just sat down and the orchestra started playing and I burst into tears. And I couldn't sing. And she was like, what's the matter? I went, I just haven't heard an orchestra in my ears for, you know, 2 years or however long it was. It's just too much. It's just too much. So it was beauty. It was a thing of beauty, but I think all the musicians and everyone else thought I was a bit of a loon. Music does that to you, doesn't it? And you go, I can't believe this little me, Jenna, from the council estate, standing on a stage with a 65-piece orchestra singing this song. Oh, gosh, what's happened? This is too good. But yes, Imelda, hopefully we'll get to work with each other, hopefully. And I will, that's what I was going to say. I will be stealing from her. I will be in the wings, mark my words, every night watching what that woman does because she's amazing. And I'll steal everything I can.
You know I'm recording this conversation, right? People will know that you are a stealer.
Oh, I don't mind. I shouldn't be telling people that's the way to go forward. But it is. Watch people. If you like something that they do, bank it and throw it in a few years later in something else.
I love this. This should be on just like the front of a textbook at Arts Ed or something. If you like it, steal it. Just don't worry about it.
It's true. We all do it. It's how the world turns, I'm afraid.
I can't imagine at any point getting the opportunity to go to Broadway is ever lost on anybody. And I can only imagine for you that experience was, I can imagine, life-changing. The opportunity to experience the theatre world in a new way. I know that having been to New York and done some stuff there, you just go, oh my gosh, it's completely different, but completely the same. It's sort of weird how you feel at home, but also not. So the first part of my question is, what was it like getting to perform on Broadway for the first time, that opening night? And the second part of that question is I can imagine when you receive a Tony nomination for playing that part, you go, this is really freaking cool. But of course you didn't win, but you did lose out to arguably the greatest actress of her generation. So that's probably okay, right?
Yeah,
okay, I'm totally just okay. Checking.
I knew I wasn't going to win. I went to see Patti LuPone playing Mama Rose in Gypsy when they were in previews and we hadn't even opened yet. And I just went, well, there's the award winning performance of the year. Yeah, damn, girl. She was extraordinary. Getting to perform on Broadway, amazing. I mean, amazing, amazing. And to take Sunday the part with George, arguably one of my favourite ever shows, and that was before I was in it. I've been singing it since I was 15 in my front room, imagining being that character. So it was crazy, mad, brilliant. I was terrified. I remember standing in the wings, being terrified of forgetting the words, because Dot, literally, you walk on stage and the first thing you sing is that Sunday in the Park with George number, which is 7 minutes long, I think. It's quite wordy. And you've got nothing to hide behind because that's the brilliance of the song, because you're standing still because he's painting you. You can't hide behind anything. It's just people are looking at your face and making sure that you say the right words. So I was terrified. I had that thing where your mouth gets so dry, your lip sticks like that. I mean, I'm annoyed that I didn't know this later, but I remember, this sounds like I'm name dropping, but Ewan McGregor did, the real thing on Broadway about 6 years after. And he rang me up. He said, I'm so nervous about it. He said, it's ridiculous. I'm nervous. I said, okay, I found out the trick. I said, because I told him about my lips sticking to my teeth. I said, apparently there's a really good trick, and this might be good for your listeners, is if you're doing any like after dinner speaking, or you've got a best man speech, or you've got an audition. I've actually not tried, so be careful. But Ewan said it did work, is you put a little bit of Vaseline on your teeth and your gum, and it stops your mouth drying out, apparently. So anyway, I passed on this information that I found out too late, because I literally walked on stage like that and had to kind of peel my top lip from my teeth. But it was all right. Yeah, it was amazing. Of course it is. It's crazy. And you know, getting a Tony nomination is just lovely. And again, one of those moments you go, I can't believe this has happened to me. And who would have thought? Who would have thought? I would never have dreamt in 1,000,000,000 years that I would have that opportunity, and you know, it was great.
Forever an Olivier winner and a Tony nominee. Those things you can never have removed from you. You would always be that person. And it's cool, isn't it?
It is nice.
Amazing. Well, I'm very conscious of the time, so I'm just going to ask you two final quick questions, and then I'm going to let you go back to putting up all of your old programs in your office. But I wanted to ask you about You're in Town, because again, it's sort of, I guess, similar to Fun Home in that I was sort of a little bit naive to what it was. And I actually did, I don't know if it was on an app or whatever, but I remember going to the theatre and trying to get tickets, and they were like, oh, we've got a ticket on like the front row. I mean, like row minus A. It felt like I was in the orchestra pit. I'm going to admit, it was quite a lot. I felt at one point like I was just like, rain spit on me. The orchestra was loud. I was like, geez. But again, I just sort of fell in love with that show. And I'm not sure what I expected, but it was just so much fun, but also quite weird, right?
Oh, totally weird. Where did you see it? Did you see it at the St. James's?
No, I saw it in town. I saw it where Jamie is now. Yeah.
Mad show. We had the most fun in rehearsals for that show. And we're all still in touch, that cast, that original cast. We laughed so much. And Jamie Lloyd directed it. And I've worked with Jamie was an assistant director when I did Guys and Dolls. And I've since worked with Jamie on, with Kit Harington, Dr. Faustus, and we're good mates. I know he's misses really well. And I mean, a lot of directors would have gone, you guys, will you just shut up? But we were hysterical, and most of the time hysterical. And I think it's because as well, the subject matter is so crazy. And you know, I'd made choices that were quite full on comedically. And, you know, I'd say, oh, can I come on smoking? And everything I said, can I do this, Jamie? You go, yeah, do it, try it. And most of them stayed in, and we just had such fun. It's a great show. No, actually a really good, really good message. And of course, Jamie, being Jamie, made it so dark. At the end, I think somebody gave birth to a rabbit. We were like, Jamie, right? And he's like, I think it's great. We're okay, let's go there. But we were covered in blood. And again, looking at my pictures, I found a picture, and I must send it to him, of Jamie backstage with these hands covered in blood, kind of looking at us all, just with all this blood dripping off. And then another picture of me did a selfie. Obviously, must have done this selfie. And you know, I've got no hair because he got me to cut all my hair off, covered in dirt and grime and just blood all over my face. Only in a Jamie Lloyd production.
Literally only.
Only in a Jamie Lloyd production.
And it must have been so difficult for you working with such unattractive leading men. I mean,
it's been horrendous.
Oh, God.
William, I'm glad you're mentioning it, because I've had a really hard time with the actors I have to play opposite.
Bless you. You know, keeping going. Well done.
I'm struggling through.
So naughty. Okay, my final question for you, and this is a subject that I wanted to talk to you about, because I adore Grey Gardens so freaking much.
Me too.
And I was like, I have to ask you, just working with Sheila, like, how, I don't even know what a question I should ask you, apart from like, did every day you just bow at her feet? And that production, that show, that message, that story, just perfection.
Oh, thank you. Another show that I'm so grateful that I got to be part of. I love that show. And Tom Sutherland, who directed it, directed it so brilliantly, was so clever with how he did act, because act one and act two are very different. And act two is kind of like act one is the past and act two is the present. And, you know, if you're listening, you don't know what Grey Gardens is. That was this documentary that was made in the 70s, real people. And the two women in the documentary became kind of ridiculously famous, especially the daughter, who was in her 50s. And she kind of became a style icon. I mean, she was extraordinary. She's kind of like this gay icon as well,
massively. I guess. Because she was on Drag Race, wasn't she?
She was on Drag Race.
Yeah. Brilliant. Jinx did her.
Fantastic. And act one is kind of what happened before we meet them in the documentary. Then act two of the musical is kind of virtually the documentary, but some of it put to music very cleverly by Scott Frankel and Michael Corey. Did a brilliant job with it. And it was, you know, it was a big hit on Broadway, and we did it at Southwark. But I still think there's going to be a future with that show.
Definitely.
I I, you know, whether Sheila will want to revisit it, only because in Sheila's words, she's kind of, I think she'll be with us forever. But she, when I've asked her if she'll do it again, she's like, well, I'm not sure because I don't have that long left and I want to keep doing new things. She will be with us forever because she's extraordinary and she's fit as a fiddle. But I understand that. It's sometimes revisiting stuff is a bit boring, and especially if you go, I just want to say yes to things that come along and not have to say, okay, in 2 years' time I'm going to do that. I get all that. So who knows? We might persuade her to, but I think everything, with everything crossed, we will do that show again. I'm certainly working hard to do it. I know the producer is, I know the director is, I know the writers are. It's just finding good place for it, and you know whether we can do anything else with the show as well. But it's a brilliant, brilliant show. The music is beautiful. It's funny. It's sad. It's odd. Brilliant character to play. My God, she was wonderful.
All I remember is just from the documentary. I think it just goes fish giblets. I just remember that one line.
Fish giblets.
All I remember. I don't know why.
My daughter does a you know, from how old was she? 9 years old when I was practicing it, and I would play it. Go, look at this woman. Isn't she extraordinary? Her accent. So still, Betsy will go, oh hi, mother wanted me to come out in the kimono. We are quite a fight. It's cute seeing a nine-year-old being Edie Beale. It's very cute.
Well, maybe there's Sheila's replacement if we so yes. need it, maybe.
Yes, no. Or if it takes so long, she can play little Edie and I'll play the mother.
Jenna Russell, this has been such an honour. Thank you so much. And I cannot wait to be there on November 7th to see
you. Are you going to come?
Hell yes, I nearly swore. Absolutely. Fabulous. I'll be there.
Thrilled that you're coming, William. Yeah,
I can't wait.
Tell your friends.
Oh, I will. Don't worry. Just be you and a room full of gays. Don't worry. You know your market.
I can't think of anything better.
Well, good luck. Honestly, just thank you so much. Honestly,
if
I say it too many times, it will sound insincere, but I really genuinely mean it. Thank you so much.
Well, listen, if I ever get to be on a stage again, apart from my concert, and you come and see it, please let me know.
Of course.
We'll meet in person. It'd be lovely to meet you. You're definitely lovely.
That'd be amazing. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy your meeting. Very exciting.
Thank you. Thank
I'll see you.
You
very, very soon.
Take care.
Thank you so much. Bye, Jen.
Bye.
Find out more about 11 at 11podcast.com or via the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.